Welcome to today's episode of Falling to Freedom, where addiction ends and faith begins, the weekly podcast that brings thoughtful, informed, and challenging discussions about addiction to the forefront of everyone's minds. We join our host now, Chad Lacombe, for today's topic.
Well, today we are talking about a deadly serious topic that is plaguing our nation, our communities, and more personally, our families. And that is drug poisoning. And this is not to be confused with drug overdose from someone that is actually willingly using certain drugs, but is used to refer to somebody that unwillingly takes drugs that they aren't aware that they're taking and often kills them. And this, you know, topic right now is never more serious because of fentanyl. You know, it really puts our day and age in a unique category. I mean, we've never had this type of a situation because of one, fentanyl is extremely cheap. Two, it's extremely powerful. And people that are unscrupulous and don't care are putting this drug in everything imaginable. And unsuspecting people are taking these drugs, and often with deadly consequences. And so, you know, our topic today gets into this for several reasons. One, we want to make people aware. Just because you have a pill that looks like, you know, a doctor-prescribed medication doesn't mean that it is. And oftentimes, if you're buying that on the streets, it isn't. And you don't know what is in there. And again, this can have deadly consequences. And our guest today, unfortunately, knows this pain firsthand. Matt Capelluto and his wife, Christine, lost their daughter in 2019 to this very thing. And so, Matt, thank you for coming on and sharing. Thank you for being an open book on this. I know you're passionate about it because your advocacy is to not only, you know, alert people, but also make sure there's consequences that help prevent this in the future. And so thank you for coming on. I would like, if you wouldn't mind, just sharing with our listeners that might not be familiar with your story or your daughter, Alexandra, you know, the circumstances Sure. surrounding that.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Chad.
Yeah.
Well, my daughter Alexandra, when she was young, early teenage years, she was diagnosed. And I'll preface things with I have four beautiful daughters. They're mm-hmm. they're all wonderful, but Alex suffered from depression mm-hmm. Early in her teenage years. She was diagnosed with what's called major depressive disorder, mm-hmm. and she really didn't suffer any trauma that led to this depression. It was just the way her brain was wired. She mm-hmm. was a super empathetic person and would often bear the pain of other people's sorrows. She put that weight on her shoulders. Mm-hmm. And she just had a very difficult time dealing with any type of emotional stresses, anything mm-hmm. that brought on sadness, anything that occurred, not just to her, but anybody else. She really mm-hmm. bore the weight of that pain, and that affected her. Mm-hmm. We had issues early on with her cutting herself to deal with this mm-hmm. pain, and we got Alex into therapy in her teenage years, and to the outside world, nobody really knew these mm-hmm. internal struggles. She was able to mask it very well. In addition to being a very empathetic young lady, she was very intelligent. She mm-hmm. had a very high IQ. She eventually got into college on a full academic scholarship. Mm-hmm. She was very witty, had a very keen sense of humor, mm-hmm. and she could play it off really well. But
mm-hmm. sounds like an amazing young lady.
Yes, but ultimately she suffered from this depression. Mm-hmm. But as she got older, later in her teenage years, she seemed to be dealing with it better. We had her on certain medications, which seemed to have issues as well. She didn't like taking meds, and we weren't real fond of it either, mm-hmm. but the alternative was often worse. So she cycled through a number of doctors trying to get things right. Alex always said she just wanted to feel normal. Mm. And unfortunately, the therapists and the doctors that she saw, most of them weren't getting it. And she would say that. She said she would go to these sessions and say, they just don't get it, and they're not listening. And so I think at some point, Alex took it upon herself to try to figure out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, she got into college on a full academic scholarship. Mm-hmm. And she was in her sophomore year in 2019, and she was going to Arizona State University, but she came home for Christmas break. Mm-hmm. And just 2 days before Christmas, she spent the day shopping with her mom, Christmas shopping. They had a wonderful day together. They came home that day, and the evening was a normal evening. And eventually she said goodnight to everybody. And the morning of December 23rd, I had gotten up and went to work as normal and was just pulling into the driveway at my shop. And I got a call from my youngest daughter, and she said, "Dad, get home. Alex is dead." And my world just fell out from under me in that moment, and drove home as fast as I could, and pulled up in our neighborhood, and there was medics and a sheriff's car. Driveway was blocked. I just threw my car into park in the middle of the street and went running in the house, and it was a bit chaotic because my youngest daughter was there crying, and my wife was home, and there was two deputies there, and one was standing in front of Alex's door and wouldn't let me in. They had to conduct a brief investigation, another deputy inside, and after about 30-45 minutes, the investigator on scene sat my wife and I down and said, "I'm sorry, but your daughter died of a drug overdose." And we're like, what drugs? And this is when the deputy mentioned he found pills. There's half a pill on my daughter's dresser, insinuating that she consumed the other half. And he mentioned it was likely fentanyl. And this goes back to 2019, where we did not have the awareness surrounding this topic that we do now. At the time, I never even heard of fentanyl. I had no clue what it was. My wife, what was immediately triggering with her was, you know, did she take a whole bottle of pills? You know, because he's calling this an overdose, and he's saying, no, that's not the case. And my wife kept repeating over and over, "Well, this is either suicide or homicide. Which is it?" And he said, "Well, we've ruled out suicide. You know, there was no note or sign of, you know, infliction of anything." And we were just all very confused. Mm-hmm. And the deputy left us his card and left, and we were just left hanging, basically. And It was very chaotic. Worst day of our lives, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, unlike a situation with maybe a parent that has years of battling addiction with their child and going, you know, through that, and then something like this happening, and as painful as it might be, not being like confusing the way this sounds like it was, because I mean, just the night before, everything seems normal.
Yeah,
she's home from school.
Yeah,
and then this happens.
And you know, despite the trauma that we were now facing, the PTSD and so forth, just the shock, you know, I immediately started researching fentanyl, and found out right away about these counterfeit pills that were going around, blue Oxy M30s, these counterfeit oxycodone pills. And, you know, oxycodone's a prescription painkiller. And it was what started, you know, me, what was going through my head was, you know, somebody at school must have given her these, right? She had only been home a day or two. She didn't go anywhere. She didn't have her car. Her car she left at school because she could drive her mom's or mine if she needed to go somewhere. She hadn't left our house other than to go Christmas shopping that day with her mother. So I'm thinking, you know, somebody is at her school supplied her with these pills. And a couple weeks after Alex's death, my wife and I, we had to go to our college dorm and clean it out. And I was hell-bent on tracking down who the drug dealer was. My first thought was it's going to be somebody who lives in her complex. So while my wife was cleaning things out and packing up, I was going and banging on doors and seeing who would answer, who I could, and I've never used drugs in my life, but I was going to try to figure out who the drug dealer was. And unfortunately, that was fruitless. I didn't find anybody, but it was soon after this, and this is now a couple weeks after Alex's death, we were finally able to get into her phone. It wasn't something that we did immediately, didn't even really think to. But we got into her phone, and immediately we saw what was a conversation with her and a drug dealer on the social media platform Snapchat. And Alex was seeking Percocet. And this drug dealer who lived 45 miles away from us, who Alex had never corresponded with before, she had no connection and to him in any way whatsoever, drove 45 miles each way, 90 miles round trip, to deliver these poison pills, unbeknownst to us, to our house. And we, now that we had this information, and we gave the phone over to law enforcement, and this is where I became very active because, you know, at this point, Alex's death is still ruled just an accidental overdose, non-criminal. And this is really where my advocacy began because, you know, we can't let this death dealer remain out there selling these poison pills. You know, Alex made a poor choice. There's no doubt about that. She made a poor choice, but it was not an evil choice. The evil choice was made by that man who deceived her to death by selling her these counterfeit pills. And left unabated, this guy's going to kill more people. So we immediately raised issue with our sheriff, Chad Bianco, our district attorney, Mike Hestron. And I met with each of them personally, my wife and I. And once we explained our story to them, they took this matter very seriously. And at that point, a criminal investigation was opened up. And this is when I learned also, we don't have very good laws in California to hold these drug dealers accountable when they're involved in furnishing drugs that leads to somebody's death. So we had to come up with better laws. And we eventually came up with Alexandra's Law, which I can explain, you know, at some point during this conversation. It took 2 years for the drug dealer to finally be arrested. And he wasn't arrested on state charges because California does not have good laws. He was eventually arrested on federal charges, the federal charge of distribution of fentanyl resulting in death. And he's now in federal prison.
So we did an interview early on with the Riverside County Sheriff's Coroner, and she shared with us some things that we weren't aware of. I'm 100% sure you're aware of them now, and I think it would be worth just mentioning it because in an effort to warn people
about this. You said your daughter thought she was taking Percocet. A half a Percocet is not going to kill you.
Right.
Nobody taking what they believe to be a doctor-prescribed Percocet
right.
is expecting that they're going to die. The problem that she shared with us, the coroner, is that, you know, in a hospital environment, pharmaceutical environment, the drugs are mixed evenly within the pills. So if you take, let's just say, a 10 milligram pill and you cut it in half, there's exactly 5 milligrams in each half. With the counterfeit drugs that are masquerading, you may have a drug that has nothing in one half and it might have a lot in the other half. There's no, I mean, you could just imagine somebody in a back room like mixing this with a blender or something. It's like there is no controls. There's no way to validate what you're getting. If that did not come from a doctor in a prescription, you have no way of knowing.
That's right. And it's often explained as making chocolate chip cookies. Mm-hmm. They have to make these pills. They basically have some binder, which are basically worthless ingredients. Then they mix in the chemicals that make up fentanyl. But it's like chocolate chip cookies. When you make the batter, you eventually pour the chocolate chips in, and you scoop that batter to make the different to sort the cookies. You don't know how many chocolate chips are in each one. Mm-hmm. It's a crapshoot. It's the same thing with the fentanyl. So just as you could get a chocolate chip cookie with lots of chocolate chips, or you could get one with very few, and maybe mm-hmm. you get a dud. That's the way it is with these pills, and it's really the luck of the draw. But over the years, the DEA has tracked this with the pills that they have seized. At one point, it was as high as 7 out of 10 pills that they confiscated contained a potentially deadly dose of fentanyl. Mm. For whatever reasons, and people have different theories, that's kind of trickled back in the last year. Studies show that about half the pills they seize contain a potential deadly amount of fentanyl. But still, there's a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, I mean, I want to let that sink in. That's a 50-50 chance that by taking a pill, you're going to die.
That's right.
I don't think any person in their right mind, even if they're trying to take something for, you know, depression or some clinical thing, it would want that risk if they knew that that risk was there, right?
That's
and
right.
So part of this is making people aware this is not a game.
And something that's new, you know, one of the ways that fentanyl has changed the drug landscape, you know, from what would normally be less dangerous drugs, cocaine, for one example, because many people have died taking what they believe is cocaine and it's got fentanyl in it, mm-hmm. and the fentanyl kills them. The deception of it. We've never seen where counterfeit pills made to mimic prescription medications are being made, but they're being made with fentanyl. And people often ask me, well, why would these dealers, why would they want to kill their customers?
I was just going to ask you that. Why would they do this?
So you have to realize fentanyl is highly addictive. Mm-hmm. It's very cheap. And once somebody takes it, it's likely they're going to want that feeling again. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to hook somebody much quicker. Mm-hmm. And the profits are so high on this drug, because for at least a temporary amount of time, you're going to be, this person's going to want it a lot, right? So you're going to be selling a lot of drugs to them. And it's just, they value money over people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the losses are really just collateral damage. They'll just move on. They know there's going to be plenty of other customers out there. And if there's nothing stopping them, because these deaths are just marked as accidental overdoses, mm-hmm. and nothing criminal, and they're not going after the drug dealers, mm-hmm. what incentive is there for them to stop?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that is, you know, that point that you made right there is really behind your advocacy. You know, like we said, part of it is to warn parents, right. warn young people, hey, this is deadly serious. You don't know what you're getting. Do not do this. But the other side is...
Well, I want to continue on a point. You know, I referenced cocaine. There are a lot of recreational cocaine users out there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cocaine is a very popular drug. Mm-hmm. And you can have somebody who's a recreational cocaine user, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily a cocaine addict. Mm-hmm. Okay. They take it a couple times a month, whether it's partying or they want to get mm-hmm. through a day, whatever reason they're taking it. Mm-hmm. You put a little bit of fentanyl in that mix. Now they're going to become addicted to it, mm-hmm. and they're going to want to go back to that dealer for more. Mm-hmm. And that's how they continue to make money.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was reading an article of a couple. They weren't even fentanyl users. They were methamphetamine yep. users. They were in a car. Police found them both dead. They had both shot up. If it would have been methamphetamine, yeah. they wouldn't be dead. But right. there was fentanyl in it, which seems like really odd to me because it's like the opposite. One is, you know, an upper, one is more like a down, you know, it's like, but what you're saying, you know, it's being put in there to make people addicted, but yeah. it's so deadly. Somebody that is shooting up one drug or doing one drug. I heard even marijuana now sometimes has it in it.
Yeah, I've heard several of those stories as well.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not just the counterfeit pills. Right. It's any drugs out there, this is being put into it, and it could be deadly. All it takes is one time.
Plant-based drugs are drugs of yesterday. Everything has shifted to these new man-made synthetics yeah. You know, because they're easy to make, they're cheap, mm-hmm. easy to smuggle into our country.
And I think it's also important, specifically with fentanyl. Fentanyl is actually used in hospitals. I mean, there is a use for Absolutely. It medically when it's coming from, you know, a laboratory.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're right. talking about
the illicit fentanyl.
Oh, yeah. Just, yeah, exactly. So, you know, your advocacy, I know, is really driven a lot by that. And, you know, I read up and watched some different things on, you know, really what I would describe as a battle, right, with California and just the thinking behind this and what seems to me just an unconscionable resistance to doing what seems like common sense.
Right. This was definitely a learning curve in the politics of California mm-hmm. For me. What was explained to me early on was why it's difficult to hold a drug dealer accountable for somebody's death in California. And we don't have there's no specific laws on the book that could hold this man accountable for my daughter's death. Even though he sold her these counterfeit pills marketed as a prescription painkiller, you know, which killed her. We in California, we are able to prosecute people under what's known as a theory of implied malice. And this is the closest thing we have to be able to hold a dealer accountable in my daughter's case. But let me explain how this works and the challenges behind it.
Mm-hmm.
An implied malice murder is basically when somebody is aware of the dangers of what they are doing. They know that it can have serious consequences and result in somebody's death. But despite that knowledge, they continue to partake in it anyways. And somebody dies, we can, in a case like that, charge murder.
Use it for drunk driving, don't they?
They use it for drunk driving. And I want to explain, you know, and this falls under second-degree murder. For first-degree murder, prosecutors have to prove that somebody intended to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Second degree murder, which can use a theory of implied malice, they don't have to prove that a person intended to kill someone, just that this person was aware that they could,
mm-hmm.
and despite being aware of it, despite that knowledge, went ahead and did it anyways. Mm-hmm. And in this case, a drug dealer, similar to a drunk driver, right? This is how we convict drunk drivers of vehicular homicide. If they are aware of the dangers of drunk driving, yet they get behind the wheel anyways and are involved in an accident that kills somebody, they will charge them with homicide under this theory of implied malice. Hey, you knew it was illegal to drive drunk,
mm-hmm.
despite that, because you know what can happen. Despite that knowledge, you did it anyways. We came up with Alexandra's Law. which basically mimicked something called the Watson admonishment that is used when people are convicted of drunk driving. In California, if you get arrested for a DUI, part of the process to get your driver's license back, and you know, you got to go through classes and all the hoops that you have to jump through, one of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to sign what is known as a Watson admonishment. And that Watson admonishment basically says driving under the influence is dangerous and it can result in somebody's death. If you do it again and somebody dies, you can be charged with murder. So we took that same concept and wanted an admonishment specifically given to drug dealers, those convicted of various drug offenses. And we tried to get this passed through our state legislature for 4+ years, and it kept getting rejected. As simple as this law is, keep in mind, it's simply a warning. This warning is given to you. If you adhere to the warning, you have nothing to worry about. It doesn't lock anybody up. It doesn't charge anybody mm-hmm. with murder. It's only if you disregard this warning. Now, this admonishment can be used in court to prove that you were indeed aware of those dangers. Mm-hmm. Because right now, without an admonishment like this and without the Watson admonishment, mm-hmm. you're going to find this crazy. But if you happened to get in a crash and you were driving under the influence and you kill somebody, and it was your first time ever being involved in a DUI, you actually have a defense to say, I did not know that the alcohol was going to impair me the way it did. Mm-hmm. You have that, and it's up to the prosecutors to prove otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that can be a very difficult thing to prove. You're trying mm-hmm. to prove what somebody knows in their head. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where the Watson admonishment became very useful in mm-hmm. repeat drunk driving cases, because if somebody had a DUI that they were convicted of, mm-hmm. they would be able to refer to that Watson admonishment and prove that they were aware of the dangers because they had been told.
Yeah. And something just, I don't want to get off into the weeds in it, but I think, and I, you know, understood this from just watching some of the things that were put out about this battle that, you know, you and your wife fought to get this into law, is that in California, legislators don't actually have to vote no on something to shoot it down.
That's right.
They can just not show up.
So,
and it is essentially a no vote without like going on record and saying no. It seems pretty cowardly to me.
Yeah. The way the process works to get a law passed in California, it has to be voted upon by our full state Senate. We have 40 state senators in California, and it's a simple majority. You have to get 21 of the 40 to vote yes on it. And then there's a couple of minor other steps, but then basically it goes to the governor to get signed into law. But the very first step is getting it to pass out of committee. Of these, mm-hmm. Of these 40 senators, they're all divided into different committees. So you have a committee to deal with traffic issues, health issues, mm-hmm. Anything that's punitive and has jail involved or imprisonment mm-hmm. goes to the public safety committee. Mm-hmm. So our public safety committee, the Senate Public Safety Committee, consists of 5 senators. And when a bill is presented to them, you have to get 3 of those 5 to say yes to it for it to pass to the full Senate floor for a full Senate vote. So we presented Alexandra's law to the Senate Safety Committee multiple times, and we could not get 3 of the 5 senators to support it. And oftentimes, like you just pointed out, when it came time for them to vote, they would abstain from voting. And an abstain, and this was another rude awakening to politics in California. An abstain vote means they didn't vote on it, but it's essentially the same as a no, because you have to get 3 yes votes for it to pass. Mm-hmm. So if they don't vote, it's a no. But what it does, it shields them from being scrutinized from media or whoever to be able to call them out and question them. Hey, why did you not support this bill? Mm-hmm. Why did you vote no on it? They didn't vote no. Yeah. It's not on record that they even voted, so they don't even have to answer to
it. Well, I don't know if you're comfortable, but I'd love for you just to name those people, because to me, they're cowards.
Sure. The Senate Safety Committee, a couple members changed over the few years, but in the last Senate hearing, those who either voted no or abstained from voting were Senator Scott Wiener, Senator Aisha Wahab, and Senator Stephen Bradford. Those three senators either voted no or abstained from voting.
So what were some of the objections that these senators had to this law? Because it sounds like common sense to me and probably anybody listening to this.
Yeah. These senators, their logic is, it's beyond what us citizens would think is rational. One of the many excuses was that oftentimes these drug dealers don't even know themselves what they're selling. And I want to pull up a paper that I brought in because
yes, absolutely.
My daughter's case stems back to 2019. Certainly, we've had a much more awareness and advocacy brought forward over the last couple years. There was a plea deal in my daughter's case, mm-hmm. and that we can maybe go into later if we have time. Part of the plea arrangement was for him to admit that he knew the pills he was selling was counterfeit and that they contained fentanyl. And I want to read to you what the dealer in my daughter's case acknowledged.
Yeah, please do.
It says, specifically, on the night of December 22nd, 2019, Alexandra Capoluto asked defendant if he could sell her Percocet pills, a prescription painkiller. Defendant agreed to sell Alexandra Percocet pills. Defendant drove to Alexandra's home in Temecula, California, and sold her what turned out to be approximately 11 counterfeit oxycodone pills that he later described to law enforcement as blue oxys or M30s. Defendant knew it was illegal for him to sell the pills and that they contained fentanyl or some other federally controlled substance. Upon going to bed the night of December 22nd, 2019, Alexandra Capoluto ingested half of one of the pills. The fentanyl entered her system, poisoning her body, and caused her death. And for those senators to sit on that committee and say these drug dealers don't know what they're selling, I wanted to shove this in their face and say, not in my daughter's case, not all the way back in 2019. And when you already as late as 2024 are saying that they don't know what they're selling, that's BS. You're coming up with every excuse you can to not hold these people accountable.
It's just crazy. Taking the side of the drug dealer over your daughter.
Keep in mind, somebody only gets the warning if they're convicted of a drug offense. So they would have had to first be convicted to get this warning anyways, meaning they have been caught furnishing, distributing, or manufacturing hard drugs. It's unfathomable just how bad our state legislature is and the people that they put on the Public Safety Committee in particular. And this goes way beyond drug-related cases. Mm-hmm. We're talking about crimes in general, violent crimes. They don't pass anything that can potentially hold people accountable and get them off of our streets and imprison them.
Yeah. And then try and call that compassion. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So I don't know that many people are aware, I know I wasn't, that Alexandra's Law was even a part of Prop 36.
Yeah, so with us not being able to get it passed through our state legislature, and the people behind Prop 36, who were primarily our district attorneys throughout California, you know, they're the ones seeing firsthand that criminals in general are just being... they're unprosecutable based on laws in California, and they realized something needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And they put together Prop 36, which was a measure that would be taken to the voters to deal with, you know, a few of California's major problems, homelessness, mm-hmm. drug addiction, and theft.
Yeah, theft is the one that was in my mind. Whenever I talk to people, it was like that crazy, like you can steal up to $950 or whatever it was without, you know, it being
they and that's all intertwined, you know, people using drugs who go down a road of addiction, eventually they're probably going to start stealing because they're going to lose their job and they need to continue you know, to support their addiction and so forth. So it's all intertwined, but the people behind Prop 36 saw, you know, how we were, how much common sense, number one, Alexandra's law made, the struggles that we were having trying to get it passed through our state legislature, and they decided to include it in this ballot measure. And that was awesome. It was finally, we had a path where we really knew that, hey, we could make this law a reality. And it wasn't an easy process. We had to get well over 500,000 signatures to get it qualified for the ballot, which is not easy. And you have to do it in a very short period of time. But we got nearly a million signatures, almost double the requirement. And you want to cushion it because they will look at every way to make a signature not count. Realize a ballot measure is the people's way around our legislature. Our legislators don't like things going to a ballot because they want to control everything. When there something goes to the ballot, for the people to vote on, they have no control over it. Fortunately, Prop 36 passed with nearly 70% of California's voters supporting it. So when Prop 36 passed, Alexandra's law passed.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, I wasn't even aware. And as I started digging into it, you really have to dig into to pull it out. Are there efforts right now to even like take it further?
So right now, fortunately, those who are convicted of drug offenses, they're going to get Alexandra's law, the admonishment. And I could read you that admonishment if you'd like. In fact, I will go ahead and read it to you. This is what will be documented on court records and given to the defendant to sign if someone's convicted of a drug offense. This is what they'll get. It says this. And this is California Health and Safety Code 11369. It says, you are hereby advised that it is extremely dangerous and deadly to human life to illicitly manufacture, distribute, sell, furnish, administer, or give away any drugs in any form, including real or counterfeit drugs or pills. You can kill someone by engaging in such conduct. All drugs and counterfeit pills are dangerous to human life. These substances alone or mixed kill human beings in very small doses. If you illicitly manufacture, distribute, sell, furnish, administer, or give away any real or counterfeit drugs or pills, and that conduct results in the death of a human being, you could be charged with homicide up to and including the crime of murder within the meaning of Section 187 of the Penal Code. So, at this point, anyone who's convicted of a hard drug offense is going to get this read to them in court, provided to them in writing, and they will have to sign it as well. And no longer will they have the excuse that they had prior to Prop 36 to say they did not know that the drugs they were dealing with could result in someone's death.
And this is, I know you, are, you know, certainly a big advocate, and you have drughomicide.com. Is that really the push behind that?
Stopdrughomicide.org is the website to our nonprofit organization. We also have a great website which thoroughly explains Alexandra's law. That's alexandraslaw.info. And your listeners can go on there and check out and learn more about Alexandra's law. And
yeah, I think everyone should.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How are you and your wife doing? I mean,
it's losing a child. It's a game changer. It sets your life on a completely different trajectory. And my wife, God bless her, a little over a year after we lost Alex, my wife was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She was considered terminal. Doctor mentioned that, based on the spread of the cancer at that time, she probably had around 3 years. And she underwent the fight of her life. And by the grace of God, she's in remission.
Wow. Praise the Lord.
And so, you know, that's, and we faced some other challenges. I had an employee who embezzled a significant amount of money from me during this time, during when we were at, you know, the time where we were at our heightened grief, you know, portion of all this. And I mentioned that because there are ripple effects to this. There are ripple effects specifically due to this fentanyl epidemic that people have no clue about. The costs to society go far beyond the person who's dead. The ripple effects, the person who took advantage of me during this time, he's now in state prison. If I had never experienced this loss, that would not have happened. I would not have been in a state of mind where this person would have been able to take advantage of me like he did. My wife's cancer, I 100% put that on the stress of losing a child. That would not have happened if this drug dealer hadn't sold Alex counterfeit pills. So there's widespread effects. You know, going back to excuses by the legislature, you know, this is going to cost too much to fight. I guarantee you, whatever, there's no dollar amount you can put on the lives of our loved ones in the first place. But I guarantee you what we're losing costs far more than what we're saving by not holding these dealers accountable.
Yeah, I know listeners, myself, I mean, our heart goes out for you and Christine and your family. But I mean, thank you for, you know, making this, you know, a part of your life to be an advocate. I mean, because it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot out there. And with that personal connection, you seem like a fighter to me, you know, want to be in there and making sure that these things are understood, that there are consequences. And man, unfortunately, in this state, it just feels like an uphill battle.
And beyond the accountability aspect, I really want to touch on the two other areas that are critical. Education.
Yeah.
And mental health.
Yes.
This isn't rocket science. There are three components to this epidemic. Education, accountability, and mental health. If we did all of those three things really, really well, we would put this scourge to rest. And we even have a difficult time trying to go to schools and present this to classes and educate our students, because the reality is, when are most people in their lives likely to experiment with drugs?
When they're younger.
When they're younger. And kids today are making the same exact choices that many of us may have made. If not, we certainly knew, whether it was siblings or friends or acquaintances, we knew people who dabbled in drugs when we were young. Kids today are making those same decisions. But the drug landscape has changed, and one time can be your last with fentanyl. If you can't, I say this to parents, trying to get it to sink in, because so many don't think this can affect their family. And if you can't guarantee that your child won't try one drug one time, you can't guarantee they won't be a victim of fentanyl.
What reason would the schools give for not allowing this message to be brought forth?
I think they want to turn a blind eye to the problem. I think many of them still put this in a category of a drug addiction issue, and think that it needs to be, you know, handled through you know, drug treatment. But by the time you get to that, if you're lucky enough to get to drug treatment, you're lucky, because oftentimes you're dead before you even get there. And again, I think they're just wanting to turn a blind eye and pretend that everything's fine at their school and their surrounding communities and their neighborhoods. I was recently asked to, we were going to be doing an assembly at one of the larger schools in Temecula, and it eventually got canceled. And the disappointment, what was extremely disappointing, was that they asked if I would come speak at one of the Saturday classes. And the Saturday classes, you know, are typically for those who are making up work or, you know, kids that got in trouble. And it really shows how naive these school officials are, mm-hmm. because this transcends all students. It can, we've seen stellar straight A students to those who might be having issues and getting in trouble. And they wanted to narrow this down to just the students that we think are likely to mm-hmm. to die from this. And that just shows we have a lot of work to do because they don't get it.
Yeah, no, they don't get it. I don't know if you're familiar. California's policy currently for drug addiction, you know, like that whole side, is something called permissive harm reduction. Have you heard of that?
I'm certainly aware of various aspects of harm reduction, but
basically, you know, instead of like telling people, you know, using drugs is bad and you shouldn't do that, it's almost like that's not compassionate. We just need to make people comfortable and safe so they can use. And I mean, it's like,
right.
It boggles the mind to think that that's California's official policy.
Right. And I support various measures of harm reduction, Narcan.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But at the same time, we have to have a means of getting these people into help. If, mm-hmm. if we're just going to support them in their drug use and not provide them with help, then it's pointless. We're just, we're promoting drug use.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have a good support group around you? I mean,
there are unfortunately so many parents that we've met. Our support group amongst peers is very large, mm-hmm. and that's sad, actually.
Yeah.
I don't want to meet another parent who's lost a child. But I'm glad we have this support amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I've aligned myself with many other parents who have put our efforts towards advocacy, because, you know, we can sit and wallow in our grief. And that's the last thing I think my daughter would want.
Mm-hmm.
She would rather see her parents out there doing something. The last thing I would want when I die and I'm reunited with my daughter in heaven, would be for her to say, you know, Dad, why didn't you do anything? But I think in addition to the hug, I'm going to get a pretty good high five from her.
I'm sure you will. Yeah. Well, do you have anything else that you would, I mean, I know you, you know, shared a lot and we're grateful and thankful, but any last things that you might want to share to parents out there, young people in this? I mean, I know you, you know, certainly mentioned, you know, be aware. It only takes one. If you can't guarantee that they won't take one, but if there was anything else you wanted to share with our listeners.
You know, for the parents that are out there and they have teenagers in this drug landscape, you've got to educate your children, mm-hmm. make them aware of the dangers. We were also part of a very good documentary called Dead on Arrival. You can find that on YouTube. Put in Dead on Arrival. Put in fentanyl film. You'll find it. It's a 21-minute documentary mm-hmm. meant specifically for young adults and teenagers. That will help educate them on this. For the parents, you know, really pay attention who's running for office. Mm-hmm. We mentioned those senators that represent certain districts earlier. We need elected representatives that are going to support strong laws that hold people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really, we're all so busy in our daily lives. You know, it's tough to make ends meet these days. We're just trying to survive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're so focused on ourselves, we've let these people get into office that are now running California, and they have an agenda that doesn't line up with I believe, with the values of most Californians. So we have to make sure we're paying attention to who's running for office.
Absolutely. You know, I just wanted to maybe bring up one last thing. You know, securing drugs is not like it used to be. Right, you don't have to go to some dark alley and meet
someone you don't know in a sketchy neighborhood to get the drugs. I mean, these young people can just go online. They can go on their phones, as with your daughter.
And you have drug dealers, and I often refer to them as death dealers, because that's ultimately what they are. They're dealing death. They are targeting. They know how to target those who are vulnerable. As I mentioned, my daughter suffered from depression and anxiety, and they have menus these days with emojis and things that make it, you know, appear that all your troubles are going to go away. If you're suffering from this, here, take this flashy pill. If you're suffering from that, we have this flashy pill. And this is all glorified in music and songs. And it's a real challenge that young people face these days. Like you mentioned, if in my day, if I was going to go buy drugs, I was meeting up with some sketchy person and probably very scared. These are normal looking people that are pushing these drugs, and they will come deliver them to your house, unbeknownst to the parents. And something that is very important, if I had young kids today, the number one thing I would make sure I would do, absolutely number one, this is critical, I want to emphasize this: if your child has a phone, you need to get parental monitoring software on their phone. They won't know it's on there. Most likely, as a parent, you're paying their phone bill. You could get it on their phone without them knowing it. But what it will do, and these companies, they stay on top of all this, if there's anything that your child is searching for or anything that somebody else is sending them, it's going to notify you immediately so you can intervene. If I had something like that available, my daughter was 20 years old, a young adult. She's still on her phone plan. But if we had had parental monitoring software on her phone, we would have saw her corresponding with the drug dealer, and we could have prevented her death. This is equally as important as a seatbelt in your car. If you're going to make sure your child's buckled up, you need to make sure you have parental monitoring software on their phone.
Absolutely. It's not an invasion of their privacy. It's called parenting.
Right.
Well, Matt, thank you for coming on and sharing, heartbreaking story, but much needed advocacy and information. And we will be continuing to follow your story and do what we can to expose these things with the little platform that we have.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Appreciate the attention you're giving to this subject. I mean, obviously, wish you didn't have to be here, but this is about as important as it gets.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a part of this much needed conversation as we expose the raw truths about addiction. Don't forget to like, follow, and most importantly, share. Remember, addiction is the dirty little secret that every family deals with, but nobody wants to talk about.